This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello folks, welcome to Switch It, where we've always been suspicious of reverse scoops. England were railroaded by India in Rajkot to go 2-1 down in the series, but have the wheels fallen off the Bazball bandwagon too? With only a few days turnaround before the fourth test, Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum will have to get pumping those tyres. A 434-run defeat would ordinarily be cause for introspection, though that's not really the style of this England team. While they move on without regrets or recriminations, it falls to us humble podcasters to sift through the wreckage. Joining me in the studio for that purpose today are ESPN Cricket Info UK editor Andrew Miller and assistant editor Matt Waller. And while our focus is on the men, we will also have a cheeky preview of our new women's cricket podcast for you. ESPN Cricket Info Power Play launches on Wednesday of this week, ahead of the 2024 WPL. The first episode features an exclusive interview with Nat Siverbrunt. Here are Valkyrie Baines and Fidoz Munda to tell you more.
Hello everyone, I'm Valkyrie Baines.
And I'm Fidoz Munda.
Welcome to ESPN Cricket Vote Power Play,
the podcast that brings you women's cricket uncut.
In this podcast, we plan to explore and challenge some of the power dynamics within the sport and discuss issues of particular relevance to the women's game.
But most importantly, we'll be bringing you fascinating conversations with some of the biggest names in women's cricket.
A year ago, you had just sold at the auction as the joint highest bid price for an overseas player.
I mean, first of all, the wording of being sold at auction is still a bit baffling.
I hope this isn't an insensitive question, but I guess it's one that everyone's having to face when they do face that choice between club or country. Did you have to yourself weigh up the financial implications of missing one or the other?
Yeah, I mean, I would be lying if I said no. Yeah, having obviously gone for that much in the first year, it certainly came into consideration. Hopefully this way up of club versus country doesn't happen again.
Please look out for us and listen wherever you get your favourite podcasts.
Right, back to the tests. First off, let's get hold of Vitushan Ihantaraja on the blower. How's it going, Vish? Did you find somewhere nice to celebrate your birthday in the dry state of Gujarat?
I did. What I lacked for alcohol, I made up for in carbs and then a lot of ice cream. So I regressed it. I had a bit of a kid's birthday. What better way to celebrate turning 38?
Well, indeed. And the excitement was palpable, I'm sure, as England's test match chances went up in flames and you were bouncing around full of Smarties in the press box. There's been a lot of hand-wringing about Bazball in the wake of the 434-run hammering that India dished out in this game. Let's get straight to the crux of it. Was this a failure of tactics, in your view, or a failure of execution? Is the whole philosophy at stake here?
I think that's a really good way of putting it, and you've actually given me quite a clean out there, because I think it was a failure of execution more than anything else. A failure of maintaining execution, let's put it that way, because for the first half of that first innings, in terms of the first half of the runs that they picked off India's mammoth first innings, they were excellent. Specifically, Ben Duckett was excellent. And it felt like he got into a groove where he just needed people to, you know, bounce around him, bounce off him even. And as we've seen over the last few years, you know, whether it's in Test cricket or ODI cricket, Joe Root is one of the best people, just operating in someone else's shadow and then suddenly, you know, taking the limelight. So I think it was more... more down to poor execution, really. Just carrying out that execution right the way through. The similarities between this and Laws 2023 against Australia makes it all the more worse because, A, it's about, it felt, you know, it's almost identical situation, really, barring conditions, given that Ravichandran Ashwin doesn't come back. Well, he isn't around for that that third day. And then bear in mind that Nathan Lyon was injured when England had that first innings collapse. And it really was a sense that we've been here before. And that makes it a little worse. And also the fact that they were looking in good shakes and, by all accounts, you know, they didn't quite have a win in their grasp, but they're, you know, damn sure on their way to putting India in a compromising position, given how dominant they'd looked when they batted first.
Yeah, Stokes was quite clear, speaking afterwards, about, you know, that they felt that going hard on that third day and putting as much pressure on India and getting back in, getting them back into bat when the pitch was starting to perhaps deteriorate was the best way forward. There seemed to be a hint of tetchiness at some of the questioning post-match. I think the word reckless might have been used at one stage. Yeah. Do you think there'll be any private analysis? You know, clearly McCullum and Stokes just exude sort of positivity and present that to the media. But will they, you know, in the confines of the dressing room, reflect on, say, Root's dismissal, reverse ramping, and the way they lost, I think it was 8 for 95, as being decisive and reason not to change course, but to just at times temper the approach, and people will look back to, I suppose, that that Manchester test against South Africa in the first summer of Baz, when Stokes and Folks, Ben Stokes and Ben Folks, scored hundreds in a sort of atypical manner, sort of a 3-and-over partnership which killed off that game, and you know, that approach might suited better this situation. I mean, do you sense that there'll be any admission of that internally?
I don't think there'll be an admission of it internally. I thought what was interesting is that Ben Stokes got the team together pretty much as soon as they walked off the field following that defeat, and basically said to them that essentially they've got to double down a bit now, I suppose, that, you know, that it's going to sting, but they need to brush it off and go again, essentially. And they did go again after Lords, to be fair. You know, they won at Headingley in a bit of a tight one. They did brilliantly at Old Trafford. Then they, you know, obviously they couldn't get the win there, but then they backed it up at the Oval and were laughing, really, aside from the fact that Australia took home the urn. So I think there's been a lot of talk of, while not so much talk of why have we made the same mistake at Lords as we did at Lords, there's been, you know, maybe a bit of referring to how they finished against Australia and how that can hold them in good stead. And, you know, Stokes said everything that he pretty much said when they were 2-0 down at Lords, that they can win 3-2. So nothing's really changed there. I think there'll be a lot of individual thinking being done, whether or not there are conversations. They, you know, I suppose it depends on those individuals. I thought it was really interesting that McCullum, when talking about Johnny Bairstow, said that, you know, they'll get around him this week. They'll remind him how good he is. It's essentially trying to create exactly the same conditions that got that incredible Johnny Bairstow that we all saw in that 2022 summer, who, bear in mind, started a bit slowly in those first two tests before, first few innings before you were really, you know, doing a number on New Zealand at Trent Bridge and going on one hell of a purple patch. With Root, it's quite interesting. It seems a bit different. He's obviously struggling at the moment, but Ben Stokes yesterday said that, well, you know, I'm not going to say anything to him because he's Joe Root, for God's sakes. And that was pretty much Brendan McCullum's reaction when I asked him today about what do you do with the Joe Root? He just explained about putting his arm around Johnny Bairstow. I said to him, well, you know, what do you need to do with the Joe Root? And essentially he was like, well, you don't need to do anything. It's Joe Root, which is fair enough. I think what's interesting actually is the vibe of the team has been such that they, I do think they're a better place to wash off this kind of defeat. You know, this is usually one of those defeats in India that, and a big defeat in India, obviously this is, you know, one of a kind in many regards, the scale of this defeat. But it's a kind of defeat in India where you can almost write off the tour, couldn't you, in previous iterations of the England team? You can't do that now. You shouldn't do that now. But at the same time, there are only 4 days between now and that fourth test in Ranchi. There are not so much questions to be answered, because I think England already know the answers. They're not going to drop Johnny Bairstow, and they're damn sure not going to drop Joe Root. But I suppose then it falls back on the individuals again, because it's about how they use these next few days. I think Joe Root will remain an interesting one because of the nature of that ramp shot. I'm a massive fan of it. Not that you could tell by my face when he played it against Bumrah, certainly because of the end product. But it was, you know, the intention of it was right, but then the intention spoke of a bit of pressure coming into that innings, that Bumrah had got him a few times and that he felt trapped on the crease and that he wanted to put him off his line. And, you know, he did do it against Cummins, but he was flying against Cummins at certain points when he did it. And he's using it as a way to almost dig himself out of a hole against Bumrah. Now, he looked pretty solid before playing it. And I wonder how much strength he can take from, you know, that mini period of being comfortable and getting out in an avoidable way rather than being trapped on the crease, either LBW or nicking behind. But again, that's all beholden on the individual, because as a collective, I don't think the messaging's changed at all. And if anything, they are going to, as I said at the start, and as they'll continue to say, I think they're just going to go harder in Ranchi.
Go harder or go home. That is the way. I mean, clearly, there's no doubting the mentality, the confidence. You've touched on the Ashes, 2-0 down, and but for the rain in Manchester, it could have been, you know, 3-2 and a comeback sort of almost unprecedented. It was scale really here to win in India from, albeit they were 1-0 up, now 2-1 down, two tests to play. They clearly believe they can, Stokes McCullum, but do you think they've got the tools to actually do it? You know, runs on the board and taking 20 wickets. It seems increasingly that the way India have gone with sort of pitch preparation is that these are good surfaces. They're not going to be dogfights on turning wickets. You know, have England, whether that's involving some changes of personnel, have they got it in their locker to win these next two tests, whether you know the management believe it or otherwise?
Yeah, and I think that's an important point to bring up. Actually, the pitches have been brilliant. Really, they've kind of had something in it for everyone, and that's all you could ask for. And you know, they wear at the end and turn, and you know, whoever's on top benefits from that. I suppose thing you could do with winning a toss, you know, Ben Stokes has won a lot of tosses in his career, but he's lost the last two, and it's, you know, it's not been ideal. I suppose the in terms of, do they have the wares to win the next two? They certainly have the batting, and with the batting comes the runs, and with those inexperienced spinners, you need runs. So it's kind of, you know, one hand leading the other here, because I think we know what we were coming into, or what rather the players that were coming into this series and their inexperience. But, you know, I've been quietly impressed with Tom Hartley. You know, very impressed with his batting, but also just the way he plugs away. I think that's also quite important as well. I think we talked about it on the previous switch here about the duty of care to spinners. I think we're actually past that point now where they're actually very confident. You know, Bashir's only played one test, but I think Tom Hartley is taking a lot in his stride. And likewise, Rehan Ahmed, who had a quite chastening third innings in Rajkot, but you know, his enthusiasm remains undimmed. And as Stokes said, he thinks he'll be better for that, because he's a young guy being put in a pressure situation. I think the important part of all this, though, is that India are just playing them a bit better, and they're playing them a bit better by respecting them a little bit more, without losing that sense of, look, these are for the taking here. You know, Tom Hartley has, I think he's taken, you know, he's in the teens for wickets. I think he's bowled as many full tosses as well. And I think Jaiswal's hit all of them for six. It certainly feels that way anyway. And I think that's what's changed as well. It's changed with India's selection. It's changed a lot with Sarfaraz Khan coming in and you know, playing expansively from the off, and almost telling the rest of the people who are there that, come on, like, you know, they're bowling the odd magic ball, but they're also bowling quite a few boundary balls, and we need to hit those balls to the boundary. The fact that India outgunned England on the sixes front dramatically, you know, almost six times as many sixes in this previous test, is something that they're just going to push on with, I think. I don't know about KL Rahul coming back, but, you know, Pastana's been a bit too tentative, and Rahul coming back is an immediate upgrade. And I just think, by and large, aside from Ravi Jadeja's century, the, you know, the runs that have been scored by India over the last two tests have been through almost a bit of chest puffing out and flexing, remembering who they are in home conditions, and also just reminding themselves that this is an inexperienced England attack. And while they'll be, while they are going to be backed by Stokes, and they're going to be backed in the field, and they're going to keep coming in, they're also going to keep leaking boundaries.
In terms of what they might change for this fourth test, I mean, the spin attack, obviously Jack Leach has gone home, so there aren't lots of options in the cupboard there. James Anderson, Mark Wood, back-to-back tests, I guess, is potential for rotation in the seam department. And is some of the thinking potentially going to be influenced here by the possibility hinted at at the end in Rajkot that Stokes, the hero all-rounder, might be going to make another appearance?
It's pathetic, isn't it? Every time you think you want to distance yourself from the Ben Stokes hero narrative, he pulls you back in. I mean, is that not the thing that sends this series into a box set? Like, Ben Stokes, you know, bravely, you know, putting his knee through, what, seven, nine times his body weight to bowl England to glory in a freezing Dharamshala. Like, it's absurd and it's encouraging, really, isn't it? Because obviously it shows that he's in a good place. And I think we've seen in the field, actually, he's, you know, two run outs, a brilliant catch over the last three tests. Like, he's definitely as fit as he has been over the last two, 3 years. And the bowling, you know, he looked very sharp throughout when he's bowling during this test. He's back at 100%, as he says. He is about to break a pinky promise with his physio, but, you know, I don't know his physio. You don't know his physio. England fans don't need to care about his physio because he's done his job. So thanks a lot, mate. But Ben Stokes, the bowler, is back. But, you know, what it does do potentially is gives England the opportunity to have the best of both worlds, because they were one seamer in the first test, one seamer in the second test. They've gone for two seamers in this test and lost that third spinner with Shoaib Bashir being dropped. They could potentially in this test have the two seamer options if Ben Stokes clears himself to bowl. Feels maybe it might be a bit too early, but we'll see. And then that will allow them to bring in a third spinner. And so on the two seam front, whether that means sticking with Jimmy Anderson or sticking with Mark Woods, that's a decision to be made. It feels unlikely that it'll be Mark Wood. He looked utterly knackered in that third innings. You know, there's only 71 overs addressed between that long stint in the first innings and then England's batting when they capitulated, which is its own other issue when the batters aren't doing what they're supposed to do. He feels like the most likely is to drop out. They'd also be tempted to go Anderson and Robinson as well, because Robinson, you know, for all the talk of his fitness, he is fitter, but also he's just an exceptionally skillful bowler, and there's every chance he could extract something from, I suppose, from whatever pitch is rolled out in Ranchi. But, you know, there are so many different permutations, and even more now that Stokes has thrown himself on the table as well. So, yeah, it'll be exciting times. I think they first get a look at the pitch on, what are we, Monday today? So they travel on Tuesday. They'll get their first look at the pitch on Wednesday when they train. They'll only announce their team after they've seen it for the last time, which is after India have seen it for the last time. So, you know, we'll know probably on Thursday. Well, you'll know Thursday morning, your time in the UK, if, you know, what the team is. But, yeah, you'd expect one of Mark Wood or Anderson to drop out for Robinson, if not both.
Okay, Vish, thanks very much. Ben Stokes physio, if you're listening, we're very sorry.
Yeah, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that. Sorry. Got ahead of myself.
It's what Hollywood demands. Vish, we'll let you get back to packing your bags for Ranchi and planning your first proper birthday cocktail.
Cheers.
So that's the view of our correspondent. England are going to stick their fingers in their ears and go harder still. Miller, you didn't so much as get on at the ground floor with Bazball. You envisioned the skyscraper before it had been built. Should this be another case of keep calm and carry on tonking?
Yes, in broad terms, yes. I mean, let's just, you know, in terms of where Bazball is as a philosophy, as a tactic, the fundamental point of Bazball was always that England were going to go into series thinking we've got a better chance of winning by doing this than we do by not doing it. And broadly speaking, they hedged their bets in thinking, you know what, we're more likely to win 3-2 playing Bazball. We're not going to win 5-0 playing Bazball because we're willing to risk losing. And so 2-1 down with 2 to go, of course they can win 3-2. That's exactly the point of the mentality that they have taken. And, you know, the way that Stokes spoke at the end of that test match, it didn't sound like he was going to deviate a jot from that philosophy. So, yeah, absolutely. In theory, England come out brawling. I suppose the fly in the ointment is what is technically called Jazzball now, isn't it? The way in which India have come at England. The defeat was of a magnitude that England have not suffered yet. For the first time ever, apart from the two-wicket loss in the Ashes, the first time ever they had a chance to bowl a team out. They failed miserably and took 4 wickets, which is quite a significant deviation from usually taking 10 wickets. And the fearlessness with which India's batting went, not just Jaiswal, but Sarfraz Khan as well, coming in on debut, smacking it everywhere. I think it was 26 sixes to 5. I mean, that's quite an emphatic outgunning when it comes to the way that England go about their cricket. So on the one hand, there's no way they're going to back down. On the other hand, it does look as though India came into this game, or certainly the back end of this game, and thought, you know what, we're really going to, you know, spread our wings a bit here and play with a freedom that was manifestly absent in the first two tests. So that's the caveat, but I don't think it means that England changed their approach one jot.
I mean, Matt, there have been very few lost causes in the Bazball era. And the defeat to South Africa at Lord's was a pretty heavy one. But otherwise, England have tended to run the opposition pretty close, even when they've when they've lost the game. England's last tour of India, some of the margins of defeat, 317 runs, 10 wickets and an innings. In 2016, they lost by 246 runs, 8 wickets, an innings and an innings. I mean, once they'd been set that target, 557, kind of the scale of the defeat is kind of beside the point, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually I suppose the almost impossibility of that run chase probably led to, in some ways, the sort of confusion around the batting performance and the lack of clarity in the approach that has you know, we know what England play like normally, and they obviously started at a much, much lower scoring rate, partly because India bowled well, as they're obviously allowed to do, and we do have to you know, talk about how well they've played, but it felt like there was that lack of clear focus that this approach has so often had. But I suppose in terms of, to touch on what Miller said and what Vishen said already regarding sort of execution and method, I suppose the ultimate vindication from my point of view on Bazball is that if you think about England going 2-1 down in 2021 in that first test and Ahmedabad of the two back-to-back, going into that final test of the series, no one gave them a chance at all, and rightly so. They got well beaten, and they were a beaten team. Obviously, there were some mitigating circumstances with the pandemic, but that series was over at 2-1 down. Whereas this time, it feels like even if there will be people saying England should reflect on defeats in a way that McCullum has made pretty clear that won't happen in a collective sense, there is somehow still a chance or a feeling that they, if any team can come back from 2-1 down, it's probably going to be this one. And that's despite the fact that they have, you know, the number 4, 6 and 7 are all averaging less than 20. There's no bowler who's averaged less than 30 in the series. Their frontline spinner is missing. All of those factors. So the fact that there's still some kind of a chance or some sense that they could pull something off, I think shows how successful this approach has been, and the faith that the team and the management rightly have in it.
It's how far we've come. The crux of this test, I guess, the hinge, well, there are a few actually hinge moments, sliding doors moments, but where it went, you know, very much Pete Tong from English optimism to staring heavy defeat in the face was that third morning. England 207 for two from 35 overs, you know, sort of euphoric almost on the back of Ben Duckett's 100. And the old-fashioned approach, I suppose, you wouldn't have been at that point from that run rate, but the old-fashioned approach being sort of halfway to India's first innings target with 3 days in the game would be to score three and over through the day. You'd be ahead, hopefully you still got wickets in hand, you're maybe going to bat once and then take advantage on the wearing pitch on day four and five. Ben Stokes said afterwards that he didn't want that anyway, and then it's clearly not the way they play. Blasting their way to sort of 250 in 50 overs, getting up to parity, and then sort of trying to pose India that tricky third innings question was clearly what they were hoping to do. But either of those strategies have to take into account how well the opposition plays and the difficulty factor involved, which is you know, playing in India is the hardest place pretty much to go for, you know, England or Australia, teams from outside the subcontinent. Like, whatever their tactics, there was no straightforward route to winning once India had won the toss and posted 450, Miller.
I do think that's crucial, actually. I mean, you know, if England do win the toss in the next test, I think they're brawling. They will come out batting first. They will do what they did in the first test. Also, you know, Jasprit Bumrah sounds very much as though he won't be playing, which is a huge boon to England's hopes of really putting a score on the board. So yeah, they were playing catch up to a degree from that point. But you know, you talk about that third morning and the way the optimism that England had going into it. You know, it's easy to sort of point, I suppose, the frustration why there's been quite a backlash against this performance is that England genuinely were in this game. They were in the contest in a way that I don't think many people have given them much hope of. You know, certainly people who are baseball sceptics didn't believe that they could bounce back from their defeat. And the way in which Duckett was batting on that second day and the likelihood that, you know, Joe Root could conceivably do what Root does in these situations, and then he didn't. He plays that reverse scoop, which obviously has been hailed as the worst shot in Test history. Look, I'm in two minds about that in particular. I think he's explained his own rationale. Stokes explained it too, saying, you know, acknowledging that the Bumrah has put him under pressure. He wants to change the field much as you know, you would in a white ball game. If he wants, he played a Joss Butler-esque scoop. Suddenly people have got to fill that gap and it opens up the covers. I can see the logic if it had come off, but I can also see the frustration that England perhaps were just a little bit tactically naive at that particular moment. You know, they've gone out of their way to avoid using the word baseball. They have, you know, quite clearly hate the word, and you know, you're welcome to. But what they've failed to do in failing to define baseball is that they're playing catch up in terms of what it means. So everyone is defining it for them. And they have tried to come out and say what baseball is in recent times. They said baseball, I think the specific quote about it is, it's about soaking up pressure when you have to, but putting pressure back on the opposition when you can. I think that's broadly speaking their literal definition of their ethos, call it baseball or not. And I just wonder if, you know, on reflection, if you look at that third morning, with Duckett clearly on a roll and playing like the best player in the world, which is what sometimes happens with baseball. You get unlikely candidates for it. And Joe Root has a stage in which Joe Root can just do what Joe Root does, bat all day, get a big 100, let everyone bat around him. That felt like the template that was the obvious way to go. And then Root plays that shot and it falls apart. And it, I feel as though that in terms of putting the pressure back on, I felt there was no pressure to be put back on by playing recklessly or playing expansively at that point, moment of the game. It was actually about the pressure I felt was on India to make something happen. And the likeliest person to make something happen was Jasprit Bumrah. And therefore, see him off, play cautiously, don't do anything stupid, and he will end his spell. And then, you know, Duckett will be into his game, Root will be into his game, you build. That feels like the logical way that any other team would have gone about it, which is, I guess, is why there's been a backlash against England being tactically obtuse and not thinking the straight and narrow. And I don't entirely see the logic of Stokes's post-match comments that he wanted to get to the end of the innings as quickly as possible. I mean, why would you? And the pitch is going to deteriorate. If you've got 600 on the board, India are going to be batting on it. I mean, that doesn't seem like the sensible way to go about it. If you think about the only other time they have really gone into their shells, technically, was that Stokes-Folks partnership against South Africa at Old Trafford, when again, they'd lost a test quite heavily at Lord's against South Africa, and they actually batted within themselves to get into a position where they, I think, won by an innings, didn't they? So that felt like the obvious way to skin that particular cat at that particular moment of the game, which I sense is why there's such frustration at the manner in which it went wrong.
Was that dismissal triggered a collapse of 8 for 95 in 31 overs as well, so it wasn't even a kind of all guns blazing effort. The other key point being that there was no Ashwin at that stage of the game. He had withdrawn from the test, although he did later return. So clearly adding weight to that argument of playing what's in front of you and trying to make sure you are still batting at the end of the day, perhaps. Any other contenders for the stupidest shot in English Test cricket history? Matt, Kevin Peterson might have had a few.
Yeah, we were talking off air about the dumb slog millionaire, the one straight into the, was it the Fremantle doctor at the Wacker off?
I think so. 2013,
Nathan Lyon. 14. I suppose there's a. There's been quite a few ignominious dismissals over the years, haven't there? I think that's part of England's proud Test cricket history. But I suppose to be honest, I feel like the reaction to this defeat has a lot of it's been straight out of the Owen Morgan playbook, really. We obviously know he's got a close relationship with Brendan McCullum, and they've sort of informed each other's philosophies and styles over the years. But thinking back to some of the heavy defeats that England suffered in, admittedly bilateral ODIs that often don't carry quite the same sort of weight and attention as a four or five day game in India. He would always try and defend the team's plan, stick to the principles unashamedly, and give his batters as much of a get out as possible, and say that this is the way we play, this is how it's done. We're not going to dwell on this too much. And obviously behind closed doors there are other conversations going on, and occasionally there would be debates within the team about whether it was the right thing to have done. People would have conversations afterwards, but publicly the message management was always pretty clear. And it feels like it's been a similar thing with Stokes and McCullum, trying to avoid any sense of doubt creeping in, which has kind of been the whole mind trick that Bazball has been. It's about trying to get people in a frame of mind that only focuses on the upside and never focuses on criticism and drawbacks and downsides. And it's worked so far. Who knows how they'll respond if they get hammered in the next two tests and lose 4-1. It could all fall to pieces. But I feel like there's definitely been some similarities. And I think, much as I'm sure Root will have sort of thought about it himself at length and might even have had some discussions with other people, it's I don't think we're in the days of sort of Chris Silverwood getting his projector out and showing the batters their dismissals after that second test in Australia a couple of years ago.
Root's form is a topic we'll probably come to in a little bit more detail. Obviously, not having his best series in India against India or anywhere. Perhaps more significant in terms of individual moments in this game was his drop at slip, Miller, off Rohit Sharma. The test ended pretty badly for England, and there were patches where they were on top, but none more so than that first morning, having lost the toss, having reduced India to 33 for 3. Rohit Sharma goes on to score 100, but he's dropped. I think he was on 27. The score would have been 47 for 4 if Root had clung on to what was a tough but sort of regulation chance at slip. England also missed a couple of DRS reviews, I think, on that first day, which would have seen Rohit and Ravindra Jadeja out before scoring hundreds. And so sort of those mistakes piling up contributed pretty heavily to the way the game went.
It was a massive sliding doors moment, not least because of what I said earlier about the the tentative way in which India have been batting in this series up to that point. If their captain falls at 47 for 4, Jadeja's already out there, promoted. I mean, he does bat number 5 regularly now, but clearly sent out as a senior pro with a lot of rookies, including debutants galore, further down the order. Suddenly the pressure is such that you're not going to be able to burst out your shell in the way that they did so comprehensively in the second innings, particularly with Jaiswal going nuts. So that was a huge moment, obviously a 200-run partnership thereafter, and then again a bit of a collapse at the end. So it just goes to show what could have been possible. England could have got a real chance against the head there and would have been in a position to dictate terms. They'd have come out, much as they did, batting like maniac, but brilliant sweeping that Duckett produced. Suddenly you're looking like the sort of lead that we were envisaging at that second day close would have been preordained, frankly. I mean, if India had got 250 instead of whatever 400 plus, it's I don't think there's any doubt that England would have got a significant lead, and then the game changed. But we can talk about ifs and buts all over the place, but I suppose the point is you don't often look back on England in India or England in Australia and think there are many ifs and buts. I mean, in recent times in Australia, I can think of James Vince being run out the first day at Brisbane, say, as the one sliding doors moment of that particular series 4 or 5 years ago now. But I can't think of any others. I mean, Rory Burns getting bowled around his legs first ball of the Ashes. That was over already, wasn't it? We were already thinking, God, when can we just call it quits? We're not thinking that at this moment. And that, I suppose, is a credit to the fact that England do look like they are constantly in the battle. Until, of course, in this case, they weren't. And I guess we can come to the rationale of that. But, for 2 days, this was an incredibly tight test. And I actually felt as though the reaction in the Indian media, including on our own site, Kartik was writing about the challenge that England put up. I felt that they acknowledged it perhaps a bit more than the English media did, that England actually did give them a bit of a run for their money until they were muscled off the ball.
A word for the sort of the star performer in that respect, Matt, and Ben Duckett, chastening time in India 7-8 years ago now, had started the tour pretty well, but no significant score. The opening partnership has been clearly a success story, but. I mean, he sort of put any doubts or questions to bed with 88 ball 100, the third fastest by a visiting batter in India, against India in India, behind Adam Gilchrist
I've no idea who the other one is.
Clive Lloyd, that's his name.
Nice.
I've heard of him.
Duckett was brilliant, wasn't he? I suppose those stats speak for themselves, and clearly he's a very different person as well as player since he was thrown in at the deep end, I suppose, in his early 20s late 2016, I suppose it was, which 7.5 years ago now. So maybe in some ways it's no surprise that he's changed as much as he has, but he was brilliant, really, and I suppose has epitomised what's been good about this England team since he's come into the setup. He knew he was going to have license to play shots. He actually got worked over a little bit right early on in that innings where he had a few plays and misses in a row against Mohammad Siraj, but backed himself to just keep doing it because he knew it would come off eventually. And absolutely stellar 100. Obviously, what followed was a bit of a disaster. But from Duckett's own personal point of view, I mean, it's quite funny. He's sort of become the spokesman really for the team as much as anything. Whenever he comes out and does media, he comes out with some pretty outlandish quotes. I think I saw some speculation that maybe there's some kind of internal sweepstake going on. Who can say the most ridiculous thing to the press that will?
He said they can set us what they want. Any target, we'll chase it.
And sort of as well, which I think actually really put a few people's noses out of joint, was he sort of took credit for how Jaiswal had played by saying that maybe this is a result of how England play Test cricket, which is clearly going to wind people up, and I completely understand why. But I think again, it all plays into this whole idea of the team buying into their own ball.
Getting high on their own supply.
Yeah, and maybe that will end in complete disaster, but at the moment, 2-1 down in India. India win so many tests at home. It's not a vintage Indian team compared to some of the ones that have come before, but I feel like heading into the final two tests of the series, they have as good a chance of getting a result as pretty much any team has in the last decade. So, yeah.
Yeah, the IPL might take some credit for the way Yashasvi Jaiswal plays. And England probably do need to come up with a plan for him. I think he's averaging 100 at the moment in the series, which is pretty handy. Just on their own issues, Miller for two tests to go. Joe Root averaging 12.83. I think the general consensus, Brendan McCullum said in the sort of wash-up of this test that I'm not going to say anything to Joe Root. Most people would back Joe Root to score some runs at some point. I think McCullum after the second test said he's going to score a ton. There's still time to score a ton. And he said there's still two more tests to go. The law of averages says he's going to score some more runs. I mean, that's not quite how they work, but we will see. Johnny Bairstow, averaging 17. I think he got 4-0 in Rajkot. His record is altogether more checkered sort of in that part of the world. And generally speaking, he is a sort of baseball totem. He's also on 98 tests now. I mean, McCullum suggested that they're likely to stick with him. Is that the right call, do you think, at this stage?
I think it's got to be, because that's the way that England have set their sides up. I mean, you look back to Zach Crawley's struggles 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You get the return on investment if you just back your team to the hilt. So I don't think there's any doubt he plays both tests, frankly. And gets to his 100th in Dharamshala, which would be a nice venue for that sort of landmark. But in terms of his struggles, I mean, you know, there's no getting away from the fact that he suffered an absolutely extraordinarily horrible leg injury 2 years ago. It would have ended most careers. The fact he's back playing Test cricket and the World Cup as well at such speed is extraordinary. It's a testament to the absolutely unbelievably tough mindset that he particularly personifies, and you know, we talk about baseball being a mindset. Nobody has personified it better, or certainly in the first flowering of it, than Johnny Bairstow. So, as you say, he's an absolute totem. I don't think there's any escaping the fact that he's not the player that he was before the injury. I think, you know, we saw that 99 in the Ashes that was just fury, and it was just absolutely lashing back at the criticism he got for particularly for his catching, which again had been a manifestation of the fact that he couldn't move anymore because his leg was sore. You know, there's no escaping the fact that the Bairstow is recovering from what should have been a career-ending injury, and that he's at the back end of his own career as well. So God alone knows what that means. You know, you never write Bairstow off because he is the bullish character that he is, but also that LBW the other day, it was not only was it absolutely plumb, but he missed it by about two sets of stumps, frankly. It was such a massive misjudgment, and you do worry about that, particularly given, you know, eight ducks now in India. I mean, you can read into that what you like. Some of those were obviously in the last tour was post-pandemic. He'd gone home for a break after actually performing fairly well at the start of the tour and then came back and couldn't lay a bat on it. So, you know, you can take that with a pinch of salt, but yeah, you don't drop him. I don't think that's an option. As for Root, I mean, where do we begin? There's a huge amount of issues to touch on there, but I'm conscious I've blethered on about Bairstow, so let's take one at a time.
Well, just quickly on Bairstow, I suppose, I think as it stands after Atkinson pulled out of the IPL, I think Bairstow is the only English player who is due to do all three of World Cup, India Tour and IPL this winter, which is a massive workload. Mm. He's got a young child as well. Mm. I don't know. I've no idea whether that is anything that's weighing on him, but I hope from England's point of view and from his point of view that come the T20 World Cup in June, where he should, by all rights, be a key part of that team, that he's in, you know, a frame of mind and a state where he can contribute massively towards that, because he was obviously, you know, devastated to have missed the last one where he was due to open the batting, and then immediately after that phone call came, had that horror injury. Mm. So yeah, I hope sort of looking down the line that Bairstow, not only can he achieve the 100th test, which I think will mean a lot to him, but also is in a frame of mind in June to compete.
England not managing to look after Bairstow, oh, right? I can't imagine.
Heard that one before.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue. I mean, the batting, those are the two sort of big issues, I guess, the two Yorkies in the middle order there misfiring as things stand. The bigger question is, and was right at the start of the tour, whether England had the attack to take 20 wickets. I mean, they've clearly got the captain to engineer them as near as damn it, those opportunities. The way the series has played out, with pitches being a lot sort of truer than expected, they haven't descended into spin-on-spin bun fights. Tom Hartley is England's leading wicket taker with 16 at 33.18, and has performed very creditably, particularly in the absence of Jack Leach through injury. It's beginning to look a bit grimmer reading. Rehan 11 at 44, Anson's averaging 35, had a tough outing at Rajkot. Root is a key member of this attack, he's averaging in the 50s, as is Mark Wood. I mean, the obvious thing to do when you've been thrashed by 400 runs is to change the bowling. and Vish sort of touched upon whether the likelihood of Ollie Robinson coming in. I mean, do you think there's a case to play Anderson through these next two tests in the pursuit of victory? You know, if you're playing your best team, you've got to win the next two. Or is Atkinson kind of a test debutant in waiting here, do you think, Mel?
Well, I think there is a logic to playing Anderson insofar as he is England's greatest and he's nearing the end of the line. And it's basically been my attitude towards both him and Stuart Broad since Bazball began. It's like, you know what, you use them till you lose them, frankly. If they suddenly keel over because they've overdone it, well, it's not as if you've broken them through mishandling. It's because you've got absolutely everything you possibly can out of them. So there is a temptation to play him, but also if you were to play him, I think you'd want to play him with as part of a three-seam attack in a back-to-back test. I think going in as one of two seamers, the other one being Mark Wood, obviously, who bowls very short spells, it's difficult to... difficult to balance that out. So I don't know. It feels like England have been shedding a spinner every test, but equally, you know, it does feel as though the spinners are a little bit, found out's the wrong word, but certainly they're
exposed to some pretty tough.
Exposed is pretty tough conditions, but obviously Root being one of them. Now we should touch on Root as well, because you know there has been chat that his spin workload is a factor in the batting downturn, which I don't buy, actually. I don't actually buy that. I think it all stems actually from the same sort of sense of getting high in your own supply, the sense of collective buy-in that has got the best out of Duckett, best out of Crawley, best out of all the lesser lights in the team. It's I wrote about it a little bit with Ben Stokes in his 100th test, making the point that Stokes had taken a very deliberate decision to step back from being heroic Ben Stokes, the saviour of every situation, and he's just one of the pack now. It's like, you know what, I'll save the day when I have to, but you guys go out and have first dibs at being the hero. I feel like Joe Root has got that message absolutely to the hilt. Lawrence Booth and Nick Holt wrote the book on Bazball recently, and there's a quote in there from Root himself describing the first reverse sweep, reverse ramp that he played in New Zealand, I think it was. And he basically, the rationale, he said, was I was showing the rest of the team that I buy into this. I buy into this. I'm not going to be Joe Root, the best batsman in this team. Worship me. I am Joe Root, one of the Bazballers. I'm totally in it, lads. And, you know, you can take that one of two ways. You can say you're not getting the best out of your resources, or you can look back to 2021 and remember that what happened when England got the best out of their major resource, Joe Root. Everyone else couldn't cling to his coattails. It wasn't even a case of being the same paradigm as him. And so, you know, you can't have it both ways. And that, I suppose, is the fundamental problem with the Bazball ethos. It's like England have basically accepted they can't have it both ways. It's their way or the highway. And, you know, I think our old chum David Hopps actually made a point, quite an astute one, I thought, on Twitter. That there is the frustration, as we mentioned last week, that Root's numbers have actually improved under Bazball. I mean, he's averaging 50-odd and strike rate at 75 as opposed to 49 and 50. But the point, I suppose, is that average pre-Bazball was cramped by the fact he was captain. And so it probably should have been higher. And now that average is cramped by Bazball. It should be higher. He should be a 55 average batsman. He should be in the Rahul Dravid or Sangakkara bracket of great batsmen, or Steve Smith, frankly. But he's not. He's nudging around the high 40s, which is very, very good, but it's not as great as he could be. So that every time you see Root,
it's very
moment,
English.
It's, not,
you know,
it's just not.
No one's averaged
quite what we want.
Above 50 for England since Barrington.
Yeah, exactly. No one does it. But Root looks like the type of guy who should, and therefore there's just that underlying frustration that you can be as brilliant as you like, but when it comes to Joe Root, you've got to be better than brilliant because you are England's greatest. That, I suppose, is the biggest problem that they've got with marrying that up to the expectations of Basball.
Well, McCullum has caught on to the fact he's averaging more and with a higher strike rate because he mentioned it the other day, I think. I mean, Matt, just on India, we've talked about how this was perhaps one of the weaker 11s, or that they're fielding a weaker side than we've been expected. But with Jaswal's performances, with a pretty impressive debut from Sarfraz Khan, they appear to be sort of ominously creaking into form. Bumrah missing a test would certainly help England, but you know, the challenge doesn't get any easier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we spoke about the fact that it was quite a sort of, I suppose, callow Indian team, but I suppose this is to some extent vindicated. Once Crick Info's own, actually, Ajit Agarkar with his selections, because you know, there was definitely a school of thought that was especially when Kohli became apparent that he wasn't going to be in the series, get Pujara back in, one of the old guard, and get some experience into that middle order. Agarkar's gone pretty much the opposite way and gone for uncapped players. One of them, Rajat Patadar's not scored a run and hardly looked like scoring a run. But Jaiswal is obviously young in his test career, and Sarfraz on debut, both of those have been selections that have been, I think, fairly well vindicated by performances so far. Both have that, I suppose, combination of flair and natural attacking tempo with the sort of clear thirst for runs that seems often to be unique to Indian batters.
Basball has plenty to
well, yeah,
credited for.
It's yeah. Of course. Sarfraz.
Says Ben Duckett.
Sarfraz as a boy had no idea what he was doing, and then suddenly he watched England on TV a couple of years ago. Clearly they're in a, you know, I'm sure they'll feel like they're in a pretty good position at 2-1 up, and having rolled England as comprehensively as they did in terms of final margin, but it will be very, very interesting to see what happens in Ranchi if as expected they rest Bumrah, because Mukesh Kumar didn't look up to much in the at the start of the series. Siraj has had a sort of up and down time of it as well himself, so England will probably feel pretty confident that they can get on top of the seamers at least, and then I suppose it will all come down to whether or not they can meet the spin challenge that they probably failed on days 3 and 4 in Rajkot.
Yeah, but just to drill down into that notion that England taught India how to play, which is preposterous. It is part of the Basball that I've found thoroughly tedious since the Ashes, frankly, all of the proselytising about Test cricket. I think to go back to the original point of Basball, I believe it was a reaction to a specifically English problem. You remember Ashley Giles blethering on the outfield in Sydney during the Ashes, complaining, "Well, you can sack me, I've done a rubbish job, but you won't change anything if you get rid of me." It's like, get over yourself. But the point is, England have found a reaction to the fact that fundamentally Giles had a point. It's like, you're not going to change anything structural about English cricket just by sacking people. The only way they've gone about it is doubling down on their own mindset and thinking, you know what, let's just be the best we possibly can. You look at where India are at with these kids coming through. I mean, Mike Atherton was writing about Sarfraz Khan. I mean, both him and Jaiswal are Mumbai Madan lads who've grown up playing cricket all day long. I think Sarfraz got 439 in one under-12s match. You know, these guys are pretty well versed in the art of batting with technique for a long period. Basically, they're pretty well versed in the art of Test cricket. That's the one thing, actually, that England are no longer very well versed in, weirdly. That's why Basball is important to them. It's like they're very well versed in white ball cricket. They're very well versed in speeding the game along, hurrying people into mistakes, hustling. But, you know, ask them to bat long, ask them to bat 5 sessions to save a test match. Just, nah, it's no point. Why would we try? So again, you look at the size of the defeat that England suffered. But I would argue you know, a little bit like in tennis. If you, you know, if you're five sets in tennis and you suddenly screw up in the third set, it's like, fine, bagel me. Six love. I'll come back in the fourth set and try and do it better. You know, England went into their shells. They played completely out of their basketball character. They got completely stuffed. And weirdly, that very fact they got stuffed by trying to be defensive will have been taken in that dressing room as proof that the way they've been doing it is the right way. And again, go back to my very first point we made about where India are at. The fact that India are batting with confidence, with youthful aggression, and with players who have actually got a pedigree of technique and you know, red ball mindset, oddly, for all that their IPL starlets, the BCCI were talking about the importance of the red ball setup the other day, which may have been just guff for the sake of saying it. But nonetheless, it is a fact that, you know, England can't really teach India an awful lot about the art of cricket in the long term. They can certainly remind them that there's another way to do it in the short term, which is probably what's happening in this series.
Right then. England's basballers will be back in the saddle on Friday, which also happens to be match day one for the second edition of the Women's Premier League. Time for another plug for our new Women's Cricket podcast, bringing you exclusive interviews from across the global game. The first episode will be appearing on the Switch It feed on Wednesday. Then you can search for ESPN Cricket Info Powerplay and subscribe via your preferred pod platform. Final thoughts then from here, gents. Miller, I won't ask you to go into your DRS
how long
arguments
we
because we've already had a lovely long chat and there's an article on the site. But you can quickly summarise if you like. My other one, maybe for Matt, is can England do what they threatened to do during the Ashes?
In summary, umpire's call is a very important thing, and Ben Stokes is deluded if he wants to get rid of it. it basically protects him from himself. But anyway,
yes,
can they bat?
Well,
back,
he's the batter that's benefited most from it, well, I indeed. Think some of the stats show. But read that on the site. Yes, can England win 3-2 from here, Matt? I mean, or will they?
I think they can. I think they probably won't. And I think we can say for certain that the fourth test is unlikely to be as affected by rain as Old Trafford in July.
Yes, I think we're probably safe on that one. Right, well, that's enough from us for 1 week. England are on their way to Ranchi, hometown of MS Dhoni, and an appropriate location for the next leg of Bazball's attempts to save Test cricket. We'll be back next week to see if they can knock the IPL off top spot. Until then, my thanks to Miller and Matt, and to you all for listening to the Switch It podcast on ESPNCricInfo.com.